Cody Coates.
Joe Coyote.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's nice and foggy again here in San Francisco. It's good.
Ah, well, it's the opposite here. It's nice and humid and and sticky.
Good old New York City.
So we realize that not everyone who listens to this show may be following us on like social media. And this may be the only time you kind of interact with Joe Coyote and Cody Coates. So if you haven't kind of been keeping in check with us, we have some pretty big news. So our show is going to be moving to 5x5, the amazing podcast network founded by Dan Benjamin. And we couldn't be more excited. It's kind of a dream come true.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, the first podcast that I listened to were on 5x5.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that those were one of the first shows I recommended to you. I don't know which ones specifically.
Hypercritical.
I mean, that's a gateway drug right there. Hypercritical. Yeah. You listen to that show with Syracusa, and then you're kind of hooked. But yeah, I mean, I wrote an article. It's going to be in the show notes, just kind of the announcement. But you know, when we say it's a dream come true, it really is, because it's kind of where me and Cody both got into listening to podcasts, and Dan has put out so many great shows, and hosts have gone on to do so many other great shows. So just to kind of be or to begin to be in that network with all these awesome creators, we're really excited. As far as when it's going to officially happen, the answer is soon. So keep an eye out. Eventually, we will be at 5x5.tv/DAU.
It's a great move. I'm excited to be a part of the 5x5 community.
So
we got a little follow-up.
We do. So no listener follow-up, sad face, but we do have some follow-up from both of us. So I wanted to talk about the iOS 9 public beta. So I talked about it after the public beta 1 came out. And since then, we're now into public beta 3. I wanted to talk about, you know, what kind of improvements I've seen on my iPad since then. So one thing that I mentioned last time was that animations, when it came to the new multitasking screen, was a bit janky when you would double click on the home button and when you would swipe up. Just things didn't feel as smooth as they would on iOS 8. And I'm happy to say that now on my iPad Air, it's really, really fluid, really, really smooth. And I came across a interesting feature that I don't think they mentioned in the keynote. So I was switching applications, and I double clicked the home button, and I was swiping through applications, and I went over messages, and I had my phone out because I was typing a message on my phone, because that's where I originally picked it up. And it has a little hand off. I can't really explain it. It's almost like a you know how the banners come in from the top? It's a little banner on the bottom, and it'll tell you what stuff is going on your phone and if you can hand off to it. Or it's really, really cool. And it kind of it remembered at least like the last 3 or 4 apps that I had something in there, like Safari, Messages, and I was able to tap that bottom banner, and then it brought me into what I was doing. And I think it's a really a lot better way to do handoff versus, you know, just having to see it in the lock screen, because there are certain cases where that's great, but there are some cases where you want to hand off and you already have the device unlocked. So it's almost like the equivalent of on the dock on your Mac when the icon appears on the left-hand side of the Finder.
Yeah, because right now in iOS 8, it's in like the multitask switcher to the left of the home screen. Mm. And I had wondered with the new UI how they were going to pull that off. So it's interesting that like it's finally there now in this beta and we can use it.
And one other thing that I don't know if they're temporarily taking this out or if it's only going to be iPhone only, but I don't have the power saving mode on my iPad. So my iPad was getting pretty low on battery, and I figured, oh, this is a great chance to test out the power saving feature of iOS 9. And I went into the battery menu, and it was not there. The toggle wasn't there. So
it definitely sounds like something that they would put only on the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because I guess that's where you would reach low power very often. But I did kind of tweet out and I was like, does anybody know what the status of this? Is it iPhone only? And I kind of CC'd Federico Vitici. And he said that it's probably, he doesn't know for sure, but it's probably going to be iPhone only. So yeah, it makes sense. But in my opinion, it's like if it squeezes out extra battery, why not, you know, include it in the iPad regardless. I mean, you know, 10% left on the iPad versus 10% left on the iPhone is a lot different. Usually you can squeeze out more time out of the iPad, but if that can extend it even further, I see no reason why they would take it out.
Apple being Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
So since Apple Music came out, I have had this problem where I didn't know how to get to the album that I'm currently listening to. And this week I finally figured it out, and I wanted to know if you were able to figure this out. So like in the music app, you choose a song, you hit play, and then now you get the now playing bar at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you go to the album view of the current song that you're listening to?
That's a good question, because generally you would, you know, to get that current now playing screen, you would tap the bar on the bottom. And if my memory,
and there's three different menus, right? There's like the up next menu. That's yeah. Not it. There's the little dot 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 menu. None of those options are like album. And then there's like the share menu, and that's not it. Hmm. And you can't like tap on the, you know, album artwork and go there.
Really? See, I was gonna.
I haven't been able to figure it out until just this week, and I was wondering if you knew.
I mean, you may have stumped me, but let me just try to guess, because I use Apple Music less than you do. But so double tapping on the artwork itself doesn't do it.
Nope.
Okay. And none of the buttons in that screen do it, or is it?
Well, one of them does, but it's not obvious which one and how.
Speak to us. I really don't know.
So there's the like little kebab menu at the bottom, the dot dot dot.
Uh huh.
You press that, and then up top, it shows the current song playing. When you press that, it then takes you to the album.
Hold on. We're doing some real time. So I am in, okay, the dot, dot, dot on the bottom right corner.
Yep.
And then I have to go to where? I have to tap the little preview?
Yeah, the little mini card.
Oh, my God. That's so unintuitive. Oh, my goodness.
And it happens to me all the time because, like, you know, it'll be on shuffle and I'll hear a song and I'm like, oh, I want to listen to that album and start from the beginning. And
I'm screenshotting my screen right now for the show notes so we could show people, because that is the most unintuitive way to get to an album that I've ever seen. Like,
so annoying.
This is the stuff that they need to clean up with Apple Music. That's, oh, wow. I would never have guessed it. I really wouldn't. I mean, did you just tap around or was it an accident?
No, I think I was just so frustrated and I was like, I am going to click everything on this screen. And I had assumed that that little bar at the top, you couldn't tap on it. And then I tapped on it and it took me to the album. And I was like, well, damn it. It's been like 3 weeks since this.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah, you definitely stumped me. I mean, if any of the listeners knew that, kudos to them, because that is a very unobvious way to get to it. So let's move on to our topics for the week. And the first one was an exclusive from The Guardian, out of all places.
I always find it funny when like these Apple stories come from random places like this, or the New York Times will first report it, or the Guardian or Wall Street Journal or something, and not the Apple Mac Rumor, you know, mill.
Yeah. Because it usually gets more like mainstream play in like the media. Like you'll see it on the local news,
which is hilarious.
Yeah, because generally they report like completely wrong facts. And B, it usually pisses off the rumor people because they want these scoops. But essentially, they apparently have obtained some documents that say that Apple's Project Titan, which is their car project, is kind of on its way, and they're saying that it's self-driving, which is a new development, because the last time the car rumor came out, which is probably like a good 3 or 4 months ago, I don't think any of them were mentioning self-driving car. I mean, it makes sense now that this is out that it would be a self-driving car, but yeah, they're looking at like test locations for test driving, and they're saying that it's further along, but I mean, how far? I think it's still pretty far out. Like, how many years do you think this project is out before it sees the market?
I think it'll be at least 5-6 years. I think Apple's going to do classic Apple, and we're going to see probably the Google car hit, Tesla, whatever Uber's doing. Those things will hit first, and then Apple will come out with their car. Like, I think just like the Apple Watch and just like, you know, the iPod, iPhone, there are products that are in the category, in the market first, and then Apple comes in and, you know, presents their solution. So I definitely think don't expect to see an Apple car until you've seen other self-driving cars.
But there is also some rumors that they may be pairing with current car manufacturers.
And I thought it was BMW, right?
Yeah. I'm looking it up right now. It is BMW. And that makes a ton of sense. I hope so.
Because they're BMW. Have you seen BMW's electric car?
No, I have not. I didn't know they had one.
I forget what it's called. Like, it's BMW I something. Gosh, it is ugly. It's the ugliest car I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. It's called the i3 electric car.
I sure hope Apple can get their design department working on that, because, man, I think this car is just so ugly. Sorry if anyone has one, but I do not like this car.
It just makes a lot more sense, because to develop manufacturing, like, yes, they've mastered like small electronics manufacturing, but to develop car manufacturing from scratch is an undertaking that's probably would take them double the time. So I agree. I think 5 years is probably the minimum amount of time before we maybe see an announcement. But it's interesting that they're pairing with a luxury brand. And I'm wondering how much control they're going to have over.
Oh, well, I think Apple's only going to go into this if they have complete control. They're going to be like, hey, BMW, we need your factories. Other than that, we're in charge.
I think self-driving is the right move as well, because originally when they were just in talks of making a car, I was kind of questioning why they would enter the market, especially because we know that this is probably going to come at a high-end price. So,
I can't wait to read the articles of like, Apple sells car for $300,000.
So,
thought the Apple Watch was expensive.
Exactly. You thought the gold watch was expensive. Watch out for this one. But self-driving, that is the future. I mean, the strides that Google alone has made in self-driving over the past couple of years, I mean, they are now testing more and more in Silicon Valley and Mountain View. So I'm excited, but I wouldn't be shocked if we heard much more come out of this rumor mill regarding the car. I mean, the only thing that I can think is that say it is BMW, maybe the leaks will come out on their end, but Apple, you bet Apple is really, really trying to cover their bases to make sure, you know, the technology that goes within that car doesn't get leaked.
So retail was in the news, our alma mater, this week.
I know. So Apple Retail is thinking about doing another kind of overhaul of the store, but this time not really with the look, but more of where everything goes. So it seems like finally the iPods will be kind of over the counter over the counter iPods, where you can just kind of walk in and grab one off the shelf. I think it's about time. The time that it takes for an employee to go in the back and you know, sort through the iPods.
Does this include the iPod Touch?
I believe it does. I mean, again, I don't, you know, this is a scoop by 9to5 Mac, who heard this from a manager who was briefed on this. So who knows? But I think it would be. That's definitely a loss prevention kind of, you know, worry, because, you know, they're a lot easier to steal now. But it frees up more employees to take care of people who want to buy the stuff that's selling the most in those stores. But the other thing that they announced that I thought was a little odd is they're dropping the smart signs.
I was so surprised when I heard that.
Yeah. I thought they were very helpful.
Because we got so much training on those stupid smart signs.
Oh, absolutely.
Explaining them and, you know, just setting them up and making sure they're, you know, all nice and pretty and cleaning them. Man, that was annoying. but like, they put a lot of investment into those smart signs I'm sure the numbers were crazy because that's an iPad for each one of them, but also just how much they kind of got us as retail employees to focus on the smart signs. And I thought they were really cool, and I'm really surprised that they're dropping them.
Yeah, I mean, the article stated that, like, people were confused. They went up to it and thought it was a demo iPad. But I mean, that's really tough when, like, it's next to an iMac and the content that's on the iPad is describing the iMac that is right next to you. And it was perfect for pricing. I mean, that was really, like, when Apple took away their kind of paper sides that were kind of enclosed in, like, plexiglass, that was like the perfect solution for showing all the multiple prices, all the multiple carrier plans. But it seems like they're just going to move that all now onto the computer, which, I mean, it feels a little like Best Buy to me. Like, back in the day, Cody, when I used to work at Best Buy when I was young and I was selling computers, that's what they did. They had like the cheesy demo loops in, and then like you woke up the computer and then it would time out and play the demo loop again.
They're not going to do that. I mean, that seems so antithetical to what the Apple Store experience is. And it seems silly that they would go back to the kind of acrylic with like the paper slide-ins.
Yeah.
So I don't think that if they're getting rid of the smart signs, I think they have a smarter solution, because I don't think that they would regress the experience.
Yeah, I'd hope.
Because the retail experience is super important for them. I mean, that's, you know, what draws people into those stores, and they have – I'm excited to see what – Angela has thought of to solve this problem, or if they're just going to drop it completely. And, you know, you can find out how much it costs when you grab a specialist and ask him.
Well, I forget when this article says it's going to start going live, but it's soon. And so I'm going to head into the Apple Store by me. I've yet to visit the Apple Store by me in Queens. I really want to, because I hear it's really, really nice. So maybe I'll use this as an excuse to head over there and kind of take a look and see how they're, you know, laying things out, especially since they're kind of like a new store, and the new stores usually get the newest, you know, layouts and fixtures and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting.
So Siri is not funny anymore.
Siri is losing her sense of humor.
Man, she's getting old and crotchety.
One joke at a time. So Nick Bilton from the New York Times, he's definitely one of my favorite writers. He wrote kind of an opinion piece discussing kind of all these different AI assistants that are in, you know, iPhone, Cortana with Windows, and Google Now, and essentially is pointing out that Apple started removing kind of Siri's little quirks and jokes. Like, for example, when you first had Siri, you can ask her where to hide a body, and she would say, where do you want to hide it? Do you want to hide it in a ditch? Blah blah blah. And you would ask Siri all these different things, and it seems like her sense of humor is going away. And essentially what his thesis of the article was is that kind of takes away the personality and distances you from having like a relationship with the AI, if that makes any sense. What did you think of this?
I think it's a good move on Apple's part to kind of take this away. I mean, you can even look at iOS 9, and every time they kind of refer to Siri, it is the non-audio version of Siri. You know, Siri is predicting proactive. What apps to use. Yeah, with proactive, and that's all powered by Siri. And this made me think about when Siri first came out, and she really wasn't all that useful. And, you know, you'd ask her to do something, and it would fail. Except when you pulled out the phone and did one of these silly things to show off your iPhone in front of all, you know, your new iPhone with Siri to all of your friends, right?
Yeah.
And I think that hurt what Siri was a lot of the, it kind of just became this thing to pull out and was kind of like a party trick, right? Of like, oh, what will Siri say? And it didn't really, it kind of hurt the reputation of Siri as being something, as being your personal assistant, and instead it was your party trick. So I think it's a good move for Apple to try and focus Siri to be your personal assistant. But
I mean, maybe they are pulling back because they want to, they want to develop, you know, their AI a little better. You know, Nick Bilton points out, like, Scarlett Johansson, who played the OS in the movie Her, and how, like, advanced that was, and the conversations that you could eventually have with a computer. So it's an interesting space right now, because Google doesn't really, so, like, Google Now, it doesn't do kind of like the talk back. It is doing what Apple's trying to do. It does what Apple's trying to do now, where Google Now is you talk into it and it pretty much just pulls up whatever you need it to. And maybe if you ask it for the weather, it'll talk back the weather. But Google Now is more of a service versus an assistant. But then on the other hand, you have Cortana, which is actually getting really, really good reviews. It got good reviews.
You're going to get a Windows phone?
No. It got good reviews when it first came out, but especially with Windows 10. I read a couple of Windows 10 reviews. I watched a couple of video reviews. And Cortana is, you know, really, really smart and really, really developed. So it's interesting. Apple's definitely still behind. I just personally don't see reason for them to get rid of Siri's funny side. I will say one thing about Siri's. I do sometimes wish there was like an on-off switch for like, you know, like turn off Siri, like snark, because, or like Siri remarks, because like I'll ask Siri to set a timer when I'm making coffee, and like I'll say, set a timer for this many minutes. She said, timer set. But then she's always got to say a stupid joke after that, like, oh, remember, a watched iPhone never boils. Or remember, you know, she goes, oh, the suspense is killing me. That type of stuff I can do without, because that's just wasting time.
Like, and I think that's what Apple's trying to remove, is just remove that in general. I mean, even on the Apple Watch, Siri, there's no audio, right? And I think they're trying to just remove the audio and remove the party trick element of this and make Siri just do what you say, and that's it.
So moving on to some Google news. Google, and now it's interesting. Alphabet did not announce this. Because, no, it's very interesting.
This is what we have to think about now, of like, which part of Alphabet is doing this?
Well, yeah, because it's like, you know, Alphabet comes out, and we were talking about, oh, maybe, you know, once they start announcing new things. And here it is, like, a couple of days later, a new product comes out. But, it, you know, according to the Verge article, this is Google here. They're announcing this kind of new smart, I guess they're calling it like a smart router, called OnHub. Not really a huge fan of the name. Like, if someone just said, oh, I got a Google OnHub, would router be the first thing you thought
about? It is not. I didn't think... I read it, and I was confused that it was a router. It seems like a really weird product name.
But what's interesting is that, aside from, like, a really smart router... So when they say smart router, it does a couple of cool things. So it's a wireless AC router, and just like with all the wireless AC routers, it runs on both a 2.4 and a 5 gigahertz network. And what it also does, in addition, is it will also find the best channel within that frequency, and it does this in the background without you telling it to do. And so, you know, say you're streaming something or say you're downloading something, it tries to essentially manage your bandwidth in a smart way so that you don't have these bottlenecks where, like, you're streaming something on Netflix and then someone downloads something and it automatically, you know, starts buffering the Netflix. And then the other thing is they put 13 antennas in this thing, so the range is supposed to be a lot better than a general, you know, your general range that you would get on a router. But moreover, aside from the router stuff, you know, a couple things that they said that it's kind of like an aside, but I'm wondering if this is going to turn into a bigger thing. But like, it can talk to smart devices, and it can. It also has a, I believe it has a speaker on top. So it's interesting. Like, it seems like, you know how I believe Android, when they had Google I/O, they called it like the Internet of Things. That's what they called like their connected smart home. And it seems like this is possibly the beginning, and the reason they're calling it the On Hub is this is kind of where the connected home begins, and it begins with a really, really intelligent router that can handle all of these connected devices at once.
I'm surprised it didn't come out of Nest. I thought that this would be like, you know, Nest's next thing. But I guess Google's doing it. Would you want to get one of these? Are you going to replace your AirPort Extreme with a On Hub? I don't see the benefit.
Only benefit is the range, in my opinion. Because I, even though I live in a one-bedroom apartment, Cody,
I live in a studio.
these pre-war walls are so thick that my AirPort Express still struggles to get to certain ranges. So I look forward to seeing reviews. So it comes out soon. It comes out, you can pre-order it right now, but I'm looking forward to reviews. And yeah, I might eventually switch to one of these, but it would be strictly for range and kind of the smart connectivity, because if people say they get a better streaming experience and browsing experience, it's tempting, and it's not that much more expensive than your Apple AirPort. I think they're selling it for $199, so that's similar to the Extreme. Yep. One thing that this doesn't have that the other routers have is this only has one port for hardwired internet. So it seems like
all wireless.
Yeah, it seems like Google is kind of saying, listen, you know, everything is going to be wireless, and we don't have enough room, or there's no reason to put, you know, Ethernet ports in this. But I thought that was an interesting thing, because even like the Apple AirPort Extreme has at least three or four ports for you know, for hardwired internet. But
yeah, I mean, I think I couldn't get it just on that alone, because I would need, you know, I want to plug in the Apple TV that I'm going to have. Xbox, PlayStation, like all those, I want to be hardwired for no latency. So it's strange that they didn't include that, especially Google, you know, all super customizable Android.
Yeah, I guess they just figured, oh, you'll just...
They're going the Apple route of just, hey, it's like the, this is the perfect router for the MacBook One.
Yeah, or they want you to buy a four-port hub to put on your On Hub, which sounds crazy. But yeah, I say that this is gonna play a bigger role in like kind of Google's connected Internet of Things. But I don't think we're gonna see fully what it's made of until more pieces of the puzzle come together.
Yes, definitely. Are you using Snapchat?
Not really. Snapchat. And listen, like, I'm actually, when this comes out Friday, on Saturday, it'll actually be my birthday. It'll be my 27th birthday. And
so you're creating a Snapchat story for all of us to follow
about
your birthday.
No, that's the whole thing about it. The reason I am telling you this is like, I'm getting old, Cody. I mean, these Snapchat things, they're for the... Everyone I see on Snapchat is, like, now, like, in high school, and, like, they use it for everything. And it's really interesting because I see people. So I was at like a Mets game the other day, a couple of weeks ago, and like all I saw in young kids what app they were checking and what app they were using, it was Snapchat. And it's interesting because like a lot of that stuff, unless you intentionally save it, a lot of that stuff is just ephemeral, and you snap it and it's gone. And it's interesting that like people younger generation is okay with that. You know, they'll take Snapchat selfies with them and their friends, and it just goes out there and it's gone. And that just seems like the medium right now. But yeah, I don't see the appeal for me. Do you?
No, I can't fathom using it.
Have you tried it though?
Oh yeah. I got it when it first came out and I was like, I don't understand this. And, yeah, I mean, so, we bring this up because, there were some leaked financials saying that Snapchat has lost $128 million and generated only $3 million in revenue and between January and November of 2014. And it makes sense. I don't see how they're generating revenue. I think don't they have Square included or something?
Well, they got a couple of things, which is interesting. So, yeah, so Gawker is the one who got these leaked documents. And with Snapchat, they now have these kind of like sponsored stories that you can tap into, and it will have like sponsored video from like, you know, Coca-Cola, and they'll show like, you know, actors using Snapchat. And I just can't see that making a lot of money because it's they're not forcing you to do it. So it's interesting. In comparison to something like Instagram, fully turned on their advertisement API last week. And so now like everyone should start seeing Instagram ads when they scroll through their feed. But like they're forcing you to see that. You're scrolling through it. With Snapchat and their sponsored stuff, they at no point are making you tap those things. So you can use this app and completely ignore any of the stuff that would make that company money. So I think that is a challenge for them because that, you know, these kids are not dumb.
Grew up with the internet, so they yeah. They have probably the most extreme case of ad blindness that exists.
Snapchat's, they're definitely evaluated at a very high valuation. I think it's like $2 billion right now. That's what they're evaluated as. But if they don't, like, all right, they're getting a lot of money from venture capitalists and investment, but if they don't soon figure out a way to do this, it looks like that, you know, that offer that Facebook gave them, you know, a year or two ago, they, you know, Facebook offered them $3 billion for Snapchat. They denied it. And That could be a good move. It really could, because you hear these stories.
Alphabet
like Dropbox
could buy them.
Well, yeah, I mean, like here's a story. Like Dropbox is a big example. Steve Jobs wanted to buy Dropbox. He pretty much offended the co-founders and said that your product is a service. It's not an actual product.
It's a feature, not a product.
It's a feature, not a product. You're absolutely right. Now, with something like with Snapchat, like if Facebook did purchase them, you know, I feel like they would have a better chance at figuring out monetization. But right now, it just doesn't seem.
I think Facebook's moved on. I mean, I think they're just kind of like going full force with Messenger. And if they wanted to do something, they made their kind of duplicate app of this. What was it called? Poke. Right.
Oh yeah, they
Facebook
did. You're
poke.
Right.
That lasted for like a month. I think that they're, if they were to do something like Poke or, you know, the Snapchat kind of app genre, I think they would just build it right into Messenger.
The bottom line is there's no doubt right now that Snapchat is like one of the most used social networks right now out there.
Which blows my mind because
I know
I am completely disassociated with it. So, around the corner is the iPhone announcement.
I know.
And it seems like all of the carriers are like scrambling to come up with some option to say, hey, if you come over to our network, well, you'll get a free iPhone. I mean, we talked about AT&T, was it last week or the week before, about their plan on how you can get a free iPhone. And this week, Sprint is doing it. Sprint plans like to give you perpetual iPhone upgrades where you just kind of pay a service fee every month and then you can just go in and change out your iPhone whenever. And man, I don't know how many people they're going to convince with this. I'm still on the, I want to own my phone and not be like leasing it. But it seems like this is the way it's going. And it makes me scared that the carrier is going to like force me into this. And all the carriers are doing this.
Yeah, there's a couple of concerns. So one, I'm with you. I'm not really too happy about this whole thing where it gets tacked on to your monthly bill. The thing is it's kind of for the majority of people who are not like hardcore geeks but love, you know, the iPhone, it's kind of pretty awesome. You can, you know, they're saying that you can get the new iPhone every single year that they announce one, and you just have to pay this surcharge every month. But a bigger concern of mine is not necessarily with Sprint itself, but say other carriers follow suit. How badly is this going to affect demand for the iPhone? I mean, like, usually with a 6 or 6S or, you know, an iPhone and an iPhone S version, usually 1 year has more demand than the other. And 1 year is harder to find an iPhone than the other. But, like, with a lot of these plans popping up, I'm scared that Apple is going to be as constrained as ever to try to kind of keep up with the demand, especially if these carriers are promising new iPhones each year. I mean, what do you think about that?
You know, I don't think Apple really has to worry about it. I mean, they're going to put out as many phones as they can. And, you know, with the S cycle, we'll probably be fine this year. And really, the people who get on and order and pre-order are, you know, always fine. But there are still always those tons of lines out the door with people, you know, buying them to resell them. So I wonder how that this will affect the like resale market of, oh, well, why would I buy a phone for hire when I can just like go in and get the phone when it's ready for practically free?
Yeah. And I'm wondering if like if you do something like this with Sprint, if when you have to get this new phone, do you have to go through a Sprint store versus like
That would not be good.
Yeah, and I'm almost certain that they're probably going to make people do that, which, I mean, God bless the people working in that Sprint store. I mean, it's going to be crazy over there.
Yeah, and I, you know, now that the carriers, they really can't, they're getting away from locking us in with the 2-year contract and moving towards this kind of lease model where, oh, you want to leave, well, you need to pay out the lease. But really, that doesn't matter because you can just switch over to the other carrier, and every carrier says nowadays that they'll pay their, you know, the transfer fee. So I think Apple does have to worry about the cost of the phone for people who don't want to hop on this plan. And I think it will affect a lot of people who, like myself, don't want to go into this lease plan, or people who want to keep their unlimited data and so they don't want to change their plan. And it seems like AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, and I think Verizon's the same. You really don't have any other option except to buy the phone outright or to do this, because it seems like they've all gotten away from this 2-year contract, and that means people are no longer going to be seeing the price tag of $199, but they're going to be seeing that $649, $749, $849 price tag, which I think how Apple handles the PR on that, like at the announcement, will be interesting. Because I don't think they can do the normal thing that they do of, well, you can get it from your carrier subsidized for $199. Like, carriers don't do that anymore. How can they put that up on a slide?
Cody, that is a phenomenal point. I didn't think about that. You're right. I don't know how Apple's going to market this, because the only way they're going to have to market this is if they let these carriers do, you know, let their customers come into an Apple store and do this thing where they do this monthly this monthly charge, but that's a good point. That'll be interesting. I mean, we won't have to wait too long, probably a couple weeks. Hopefully September 9th is the accurate date for the keynote. But yeah, good point. Other than that, though, did you have anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Alrighty, so you can find our show notes within your podcast app of choice. But Cody, if people wanted to find our show notes for episode 31, where would they go?
Diagnosticsandusage.com/31.
Cool. And if you wanted to find the Twitter account for our show, it's at DAU Show. We'd love to hear feedback, comments, and if you have the time, even a rating on iTunes. If you want to get in touch with Cody, you can get him on Twitter. Cody, what's your Twitter handle?
At CP Coates.
And I am at Joe Caiati, and I write at joecaiati.info. We will talk to you all very soon. Cody, you have a great night.
Bye.